This is the Oanda Podcast, brought to you by Jazz FM's Business Breakfast.
This is the Oanda Market Insights Podcast. Each week we review and preview all the big business and market stories with Oanda Senior Market Analyst Craig Earlham in London. Good afternoon, Craig.
Good afternoon.
Fairly busy week. Let's start with a few warnings from some respected sources about the future of the global economy. The International Monetary Fund has said that debt could reach unmanageable levels, forecasting the deepest recession since the Great Depression. And do you remember somebody called Mervyn King? Used to be the Bank of England governor. Yeah, I thought you may have remembered him. Yeah, he's also come up with a warning. He says we're facing a coronavirus debt time bomb as countries borrow trillions of pounds to fight the pandemic. Now, I think most people sat up and listened to the IMF. What about Mervyn King?
What they're saying isn't incorrect. The question we have to ask ourselves is, what was the alternative? The coronavirus crisis hit at a very bad time. It always hits at a bad time. But, I mean, we're only a decade after the global financial crisis, which sent debt levels spiraling out of control, and we were only just starting to see signs that we were going to be moving in a more that we were moving towards something more promising and towards more sustainable levels of debt. And then the coronavirus crisis hits, and as I say, then the question becomes, what was the alternative? Aside from effectively leaving the economies open, accepting the shortfall and accepting the fact that people were going to die, there was no alternative, because by not interfering, by not doing what they did, and by not supporting businesses and people through this period, we would now be heading for a recession. We'd be heading for a depression. So governments have had to take this move. And yes, that does mean that we've created a problem for another day, but sometimes you're backed into a corner and you're forced to make decisions which you would prefer not to have to make. The question is how they're going to manage these high debt burdens going forward. Firstly, I think we have to remember that some countries have had high debt burdens for a long time and done just fine, whether you're talking about Japan, Italy. Yes, you could say that there has been instability in Italy economically and in their markets, but then they still had debt to GDP at 140%. So many of these countries who are going to go through this coronavirus crisis are not going to get anywhere near that. So while I understand what these bodies are saying, what Mervyn King is saying, I think we do have to accept that this was just a very undesirable situation. Policymakers had very little time to act, and it's hard to disagree with what they did on the support side of things. Criticise them all you want for their approach to the crisis, for how long it takes them to lock down, for how quickly they're easing lockdown restrictions, etc., etc. But I don't think many people disagree. As we've said before on this podcast, Rishi Sunak is coming out of this with a very good reputation for how he's responded. There was no other option. If they were going to lock down the economy, they had to support businesses and people. Otherwise, things would get far, far, far worse. And it will be interesting to see how things respond. Maybe this is just a sign that central banks are going to have to be very easy with their monetary policy for a more prolonged period in order to ensure that there's plenty of cash flow around the system to enable interest rates to remain low to give governments time. That's not an ideal situation, but it may just be something that we have to accept. These are exceptional circumstances. We've had two exceptional circumstances in the span of 12 or 13 years. That's not very common. It's extremely unusual, and we just have to hope that we don't hit another one in the foreseeable future. I mean, when I say foreseeable, I mean many, many, many years.
Indeed, it's not even clear that these were criticisms from the IMF or Sir Mervyn King. I mean, they're stating the very obvious. We are facing a big problem. We're certainly going to have recessions across the world. And I think it was just one of those things that they decided to come out with and say, but it isn't really anything new, is it?
It's not anything new. And as you say, it's not that it's a criticism, but they do have to warn about potential risks. And this is obviously a severe risk. But then how severe a risk it is another question altogether. We talk a lot about, or these bodies talk a lot about, sustainable and unsustainable levels of debt. But as I say, a country like Japan has managed to have very, very unsustainable levels of debt for a sustained period of time. That doesn't make any sense, obviously, but like that, they have managed to do so. So it just begs the question of are these levels of debt unsustainable in themselves? Is this an absolute thing, or are they unsustainable when you've generated these levels of debt through the kinds of borrowing which don't get investors on board, which mean that the investors demand a higher interest in return if they want to buy your debt? So if all countries are going through this, the money has to go somewhere, and I think they're going to go to the normal places. And it may just be that countries have higher levels of debt and investors don't punish them for having higher levels of debt because it's for understandable reasons rather than extravagance and exuberance. And that will be something, again, we may just be sowing the seeds of a future crisis. That's always going to be the risk in a situation like this. But I think what we're seeing right now is interest rates are remaining low, and it, like I say, it may just be a case that central banks are going to be extremely active in these markets for some time to come.
Okay, there was some positive news, although, of course, it was expected with the government announcements about the tourism and hospitality sectors. Hospitality opening up on July the 4th, and they've reduced that rule, the 2-meter rule, to what they call 1 meter plus of social distancing. And tourism as well received a bit of a boost when there is much talk of opening up the skies, certainly in Europe. And this will come as a massive relief for those sectors. Is that reflected in some of the share prices?
Yeah, I mean, this is huge. Companies can't survive on support alone for prolonged periods of time, and the government can't afford to continue to supply it. So this is massive news, and again, it's going to be highly debated. It's going to be controversial. No matter what decisions made, it's going to be controversial among people of different beliefs and views. The hospitality industry is going to be extremely relieved by the measures that have been undertaken, and I think many people are going to be extremely relieved as well. Obviously, that does come against the offset of more people are going to become infected by this, and more people are going to die as a result. That is the sad and unfortunate consequences of doing this. But as we've mentioned every week, it feels on this podcast, these are the tough decisions that governments have to make. You can't purely make your decisions on reducing the risk factor to zero. At some point, there has to be an economic argument. And this is the argument that the government has now had to face when it's had to change its 2-meter rule to 1 meter plus. Many countries around the world have a 1 meter rule, 1.5-meter rule. If anything, the UK was among the more stringent. And I can't help but feel that many people who have such a problem with the 2-meter rule reducing, I mean, how much do we all understand exactly why the 2-meter rule needs to be in place and the significance of it? The situation remains that companies need to do business again, and the 1 meter plus will at least enable these companies to reopen, get back to work, preserve jobs, preserve livelihoods, stop a more severe recession. The other thing that the IMF said this week was that the UK will contract by 10.2% this year without a second wave of the coronavirus. I mean, that just shows how stark the situation is and why companies do need to get back to work and why people need to get back to work. Unemployment is going to rise close to double figures, and many people do anticipate at this moment in time. The UK isn't going to contract at the fastest rate in Europe. It's going to be the fourth fastest rate in Europe behind Italy, Spain and France. It's going to be the fifth overall. The US is going to contract by 8%. These are really severe figures, and they have very real consequences. So I think the government had to act at some point. And like I say, the risk factor was never going to be reduced to zero. And it's just about determining where the correct threshold is going to be. Only history will judge how correct this move is. I think it's going to be important that people continue to adhere to 2 meters where possible. But by reducing it to this kind of 1 meter plus, it means that people can get back to business. And people can make choices as well about how much they want social distance. No one's being forced to only stand 1 meter away from people. But we will see how it goes. Like I say, only history will judge, and we should all hope that this goes very smoothly, because the last thing we want to see is another spike in cases, and we're already seeing that in some countries. And that's, I think that's probably the big risk factor when it comes to what we're seeing now in the UK, is that the US is seeing spikes in coronavirus cases. Texas, California, Florida, and many others are seeing spikes in coronavirus cases. Texas has had to effectively freeze the easing of restrictions because they're seeing such a spike in coronavirus cases. You're seeing some states saying they're almost entirely run out of beds and in the ICU already. This is feeling very similar to what we had back in March. I don't think we'll see full lockdown again, not yet anyway. I think there'll be more targeted measures, more used in this response. But it is worrying to see these numbers spike, and we saw a similar spike. We saw a little spike in Germany as well, but they hadn't handled the first swathe of this crisis very, very well. So I imagine they'll do the same again. Beijing has claimed to got their spread under control already, which is quite remarkable. And hopefully the UK will manage any second wave and enable the economy to continue to function well, keeping this at manageable levels. But we have to remember that this is extremely hard for so many people. It's not just hard for businesses, it's hard for people as well. And I think many people are desperate to get back to their ordinary day-to-day lives or something that at least kind of resembles it. And without it, the economy and ultimately, therefore, people are going to suffer considerably.
And those spikes that you mentioned in states like Texas and across the United States seem to have had a bit of an effect on the price of oil as well, Craig, because there were fears that that might prompt policymakers to tighten restrictions. No new lockdowns as such at the moment, but also the downgrading of the global growth forecast by the IMF, I think, must have hit oil as well. But they are wary of what's happening in the US at the moment. But the way Trump is going, he isn't going to introduce anything if he can help it. I know it won't be necessarily down to him, but he's got his mind on that election in November, and he wants the economy in as good enough a shape as it possibly can be, although who knows at this stage with, what, less than 6 months to go. But yeah, that certainly hit the price of oil, didn't it?
Well, 6 months ago when we were talking in the end of year podcast, we were saying why Trump was going to inevitably win the election in December was because the old adage does seem to ring true. It's the economy, stupid. I think Trump's gambling on that. Trump is saying that there will be no more shutdowns, that the economy is not shutting down again, because he knows full well if the economy shuts down again, the economy then the economy will suffer, and that could really threaten his election chances even more. And I think he sees this as a gamble worth taking, because I think he believes that he can deflect any coronavirus physical health downside, the risks associated with that. I think he thinks he can deflect that towards China, and therefore he thinks his best chance of winning the election is by keeping the economy open. And he's probably right, unfortunately, that puts him in the best position. But then the position he's in now is far inferior to where it was back in December. He's trailing in a lot of the polls, and I think if he wins this election, it's going to be it's going to be quite the win, because to be facing an economy that's in the worst recession potentially in 100 years and a crisis such as this, to win an election in that environment would be really, really quite really, really quite remarkable. Like you said earlier, the IMF views that the global growth is going to slow more than expected. They previously anticipated a contraction of 3%. They now say 4.9%. Don't be surprised if that's revised lower again, because I think we're all expecting economies to gradually reopen, and I think there will be setbacks along the way. As I say, the question is how it's managed, and I think everyone is hoping that we don't have to see further lockdowns again, because I think people have had their fill as far as that's concerned.
And Trump also in the news, because there were some rumours that things weren't going very well in the US-China trade deal talks, but Trump's been pretty optimistic about that, very positive.
Yeah, so it's not necessarily the talks per se, because obviously the phase one trade deal's done, and the phase two, I think, was always a stretch. I think they called this phase one because they didn't want to acknowledge the fact that this comprehensive deal, this all-encompassing deal, which they had previously thought was possible, is actually not. So they called it a phase one because that leaves the door open to a potential second phase. I think what this effectively stemmed from was an interview with Peter Navarro, I think, on Fox News, who when asked whether whether the trade deal was over, so whether it had collapsed effectively because of the breakdown in the relationship between the two countries, because of the China upholding its end of the bargain, and because obviously we've seen that the US administration very much blames China for the outbreak of this crisis and how they've handled it. He was asked whether it's over, and he said, yes, it's over. And the markets really took a hit on that. It's amazing to think that the market's still getting hit by this US-China trade talks, but clearly the prospect of talks breaking down, the trade deal collapsing, and new tariffs being imposed at this moment in time would be devastating. And President Trump was very quick to come out and clarify these comments. Navarro himself claims that that these comments have been taken wildly out of context and were not true. But the problem is the seed's been planted now. I think many people are wondering whether there is any substance to this deal in the long term, or whether the relationship is frayed beyond repair and maybe beyond the election if Trump does remain in office, whether it is just effectively going to be torn up and we're going to be back to square one. We'll have to wait and see. I think there's going to be a lot of games played over the course of the next 6 to 12 months, because let's face it, if any other governments around the world would rather not deal with Trump for the next 4 years, he's probably in a bit of a vulnerable position right now, and you wonder whether they may utilize an opportunity like this to weaken him further. Trump this week threatened tariffs on the EU as well, and this was in response to subsidizing Airbus, I think, and he's threatened tariffs on a number of EU goods, including the UK, and the EU has at least appeared to suggest that it will fight back, and they could quite easily target Trump in very politically sensitive areas, and it's going to be interesting, because Trump is not going to bow down. He's not going to pull out of these fights in order to preserve. Trump only knows one way of dealing with a crisis like this, and this is to go on the attack. And I think the next 5 months are going to be, pretty extraordinary, if I'm honest. We'll see how this goes, but I think this could be a quite extraordinary 5 months.
And that's saying something when you consider the previous 4 years right across the globe.
Yeah, exactly.
On so many levels. And yes, Trump, coronavirus and all. Before we let you go, Craig, a quick word about next week. But firstly, I know you're not personally responsible, but I've got to congratulate your team, Liverpool FC, on their first top flight title in 30 years. I'm surprised that you actually made this podcast, because it's only happened, less than 24 hours ago, and I'm sure you've had the odd shandy to celebrate, and you sound quite normal, really, and you didn't even mention it in the opening, but congratulations to you. It's been a long time coming, as they say.
It has. I mean, let's face it, I'm 33. So the last time we won the title, I was too young to even remember it. So I have gone through my entire life of supporting this team with, I wouldn't say very little in return. We've won a lot of different things, but this is extremely sweet. We've come close a lot of times. And yeah, I did enjoy it last night. But thankfully, my body didn't punish me too much today. And I think I'm going to spend a lot of time enjoying it over the course of the next 8 weeks or so. It's going to be an instant time, but yeah, it was.
Yeah.
It's been an extraordinary season, and there was
for a variety of reasons.
But I'm an extremely relieved man now, and I'm gonna have a lovely evening weekend of watching many Liverpool clips.
Well, I'm mindful of keeping you from your first love, not your children, but your football team.
My fiance, but
yeah. But what about next week? Anything?
Liverpool's been around longer, to be fair.
Right, that's enough about the football, Craig.
Next week. Next week, there's a Liverpool game on Thursday. There is Liverpool Man City, very big game. So next week, it's really busy next week, actually. There's a lot of economic data, all the PMIs, the usual stuff. We've got a lot of GDP figures from the UK, I think Germany, Italy, France, and I think the US as well. We also have the Fed minutes due out. That's on Wednesday. We've got the US jobs report, which I can't believe I'm mentioning 4th or 5th. But the US jobs report this next week on Thursday because of the bank holiday in the US on Friday. So there's a lot of US economic data being released on Thursday, and that includes the jobs report, which is extremely unusual. Obviously, jobless claims as well. From a central bank perspective, there's not an enormous amount of activity. We've got the Swedish Riksbank, which has its monetary policy decision, and I think the RBA. But yeah, like I say, just a lot of economic data to keep an eye out for next week, which I think will be really quite interesting. We've got a testimony as well from Jay Powell, the Fed chair, on Tuesday. So I don't think we're going to be short of talking points next week. But I would love it if we could keep a regular slot for the football updates, because that's been a lovely addition from my perspective to this week's podcast.
I'm afraid that's your lot, really, for the season. That's all we're going to...
Oh, that's a shame.
That's all we're going to do as far as the football is concerned. I'm contractually obliged to only talk about business and markets. Sorry.
Well, maybe we can put a poll out there and see if people are interested or not. I think a lot of our audience are American, so I'm not sure if football's quite as big over there as it is here, or soccer.
I doubt it very much. Enjoy your weekend and enjoy your celebrations, and we'll speak to you again same time next week.
Thank you. Have a great weekend, everyone.
Was the OANDA podcast from the team behind Jazz FM's Business Breakfast, a daily early morning 30-minute briefing for the day ahead. On air from 6 a.m. Listen to Jazz FM on DAB, online, or just ask Alexa.